There is a halfway mark between the known and unknown. A middle ground or chamber where divine wisdom and truth reside. In this middle chamber, we will explore and expose the ruling paradigms of social engineering, mind control, government conspiracies, and cover-ups. Join us as we navigate the territories and boundaries of natural law and the ancient principles of the sacred feminine and divine masculine. Examine and consider alternative energy systems, holistic healing arts, and wild soulful living to train our awareness in a most novel and abstract manner to view reality from an entirely new perspective. Welcome to the Middle Chamber.
Greetings all for another episode of the Middle Chamber, and I am your hyperdimensional host as always, Freighter X here. On this podcast, we are so honored and privileged to have the one and only Lon Milo Duquette, who is about to take another new adventure in life, as usual, and he's got some exciting new projects underway he's going to discuss with us, and we're just really glad that he was available before he departs to sit down and talk with us. It's been quite a while since our last conversation. How fares the land out west there, Lon?
It's a beautiful day. We had rain last night, and the air is full of life-giving prana.
Yeah, we had a bunch of rain here, too. So this morning and 2 days ago. So yeah, it's been a lot of rain. It's good. So, great. Well, as I just mentioned, you've got a big trip coming up here, and I thought we might as well just mention that right up front before we get into our conversation about your latest book. If you wanted to just let all the listeners out there know what you got scheduled.
Okay. Well, you know, I just came back from Shanghai a couple of weeks ago where I did a tarot weekend thing, and it was on Chinese television, and that was very interesting.
Wow.
But anyway, I'm going off to on May 25th, I leave for... Or 21st, I'll leave, but I'm going to Lillehammer, Norway, and then Oslo to do talks on Freemasonry and Knights Templar and Aleister Crowley. And then I've got a concert in Oslo. And then I also speak about the Holy Guardian Angel and do an all-day Enochian magic thing in Oslo. And then I go to Amersfoort, Netherlands. And then... for two all-day workshops and a concert. And then I go to Glastonbury, England, which I've never been. I've never been to that magical place, and I'll do an Enochian magic workshop there and a thing on the Gnostic Mass. And then I go to Dublin, Ireland, and I'll be doing talks, and I got a show in Dublin, concert with Sun God, the group Sun God, at that beautiful Unitarian church. It's like a cathedral in Dublin. And then I go to Krakow, Poland. Then I go to Denmark from Ireland. I go to Copenhagen for talks. And then I go to Krakow, Poland, do a book launch. For My Life of the Spirits has been published in Polish. But what's really exciting about the thing in Krakow is that I'm going to do an all-day Enochian magic working in the very same building that John Dee and Edward Kelly, the Elizabethan magicians, developed the Enochian system way back in the 1500s. We're going to do Enochian magic where Enochian magic was created, or And then I go to
first realized, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I remember you mentioning that. But go ahead, keep going.
Oh, and then from there I go to Skopje, Macedonia, and do a workshop on Goatia and spirit evocation. Then I go to Zagreb, Croatia, and for 2 days of talks, one on Western mystery tradition and one on Thoth Tarot. And then I go to Berlin, and for talks and a concert, and then finally Gothenburg, Sweden, to do two days of workshops, and then I come home. I go back to Oslo and then fly home.
How long is that trip going to be, Lon?
It's a month.
Wow, that's a whirlwind tour if I ever heard one.
It's only just a couple. It's just a couple days in every place. It's just
you're gonna be saying, "Where am I again?" Every yes. After about a few days, you're not gonna know where you are.
Well, yeah. And it's gonna be a lot of magic too. So
yeah, it's really gonna be disorienting.
Yeah,
a lot of different people, a lot of different energy, a lot of different personalities. That's gonna be really exciting, though.
Yeah,
I'm sure. And I love the way you're combining magic and music. You know, you've got this real combination going on. That's really exciting.
Yeah, well, if one of them fails, I can fall back on the other one.
Exactly. You've always got that back. Hey, let me just play a song for you. You seem like you're getting bored here.
Yeah, right.
But now let me ask a couple things. First of all, you mentioned that you're going to be doing some talks on Freemasonry and Knights Templar. Was that Norway or in Poland that you mentioned that?
I'm going to do the, in Norway, I do the talk on Freemasonry. I do a talk on Freemasonry at Freemasons Hall in Dublin.
Wow.
Which is a very, very, I don't know if you've seen the pictures of Grand Lodge of Ireland or.
I've seen pictures, sure.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
it's
really
beautiful.
Jealous, I got to tell you.
So I'm talking about Masonry to the Masons.
Well, let me ask you, what direction do you approach ancient craft Masonry in these talks? Because you are talking to Masons, so you can get pretty candid about things. But what's your slant, Lon, for the people listening, just out of curiosity?
Well, I have no slant other than that my slant is Lon.
Baba Lon, right?
Yeah. But the thing is, I'm very respectful for everybody's tradition, and I'm an American Mason, and not only a Blue Lodge Mason, but I'm a Scottish Rite Mason, and in the United States, it's pretty. Compared to other parts of the world, it's pretty easy to be a Mason, and I've done the best I can in the United States to do everything in the long form, and
to feel like you've claimed your seat and qualify to sit with them.
Yeah,
yeah.
As much as is humanly possible, you know, for me to do. So, I've got all my, you know, I audited. You know, all of my Scottish Rite degrees and did all the long form qualifications for everything that I can, everything I can, you know.
Sure.
And so
just for people listening who might be kind of confused by what you're saying there, I know what you're talking about. What people might not understand is, as I've tried to elaborate in my work, is that Masonry in America is a very unique species of Freemasonry. It's a sort of a modified combination of several different Grand Lodge systems and traditions woven into what we could call American ancient craft masonry or American style Freemasonry. So, you know, across the pond there in the continent and in the British Isles and places like this where masonry is far older than it is in America, they sometimes require that you know what you're talking about before you come in there, because you know, an average brother could just walk in off the street in America and join a Blue Lodge, but that doesn't really qualify in some people's eyes with regards to these orders with greater, longer traditions. And
right. Well, the the work is different, and that's not to denigrate the
no, not at all.
The work here, because if you take the time and care about it, you can really dig deep and savor the Masonic experience in the United States. But unlike other parts of the world, it's everybody doesn't take advantage of that. Of that, either from time or just inclination. But anyway, my focus, you know, I was 50 years old before I joined the Masons, and I had always intended to join. My dad wanted me to join, and I have great respect for my father, one of the most noble individuals I've ever known in my life. And to tell you the truth, he his nobility of character wasn't based on a set of religious morality. He wasn't a particularly religious man at all, and his morality was based on more or less his understanding that to be honest, to have integrity, to be a noble human being is just what being a human being is, and he was good for just for goodness sake, and not because he was afraid of going to hell or that he had to follow any religious thing. And he had great respect for his Masonic experience and was very proud to be a Mason, and always wanted me to, and I always wanted to, you know, follow in his footsteps there. And I never got a chance to join while he was alive. But when I was 50 years old and had already gone through, you know, nearly 30 years of occult education and occult experience, I didn't join the Masons to get any esoteric thrills and chills. I joined the Masons to, you know, join the Masons. Let's just see what it's about. And in doing so, I discovered that such a rich, rich esoteric experience, if you're there to receive an esoteric experience. And if you're not there to receive an esoteric experience, it's a harmless, nice experience. You know, there's not a doubt in my mind that even though most of my Masonic brothers in Lodge could really, they care very little about the more esoteric aspect of the craft. And you know, it really doesn't matter for them. It really doesn't. These guys are better guys for joining the Masons than they would be had they not. And so I learned that Masonry was a big tent. It's such a big tent that there's even room for me.
Yes. Well put, Lon. Well put, really. You know, yeah. And I think that what you said is really important as far as, like with all spiritual practices or, you know, musical practices, artistic disciplines, anything you want to think of in which you have to commit yourself to a thing and really invest time and effort to learn about it and to practice to really enrich the experience. And so when people, if they seek to do that, it's there for them to do. It's a rich earth. You can grow much there. And if you don't, yeah, you can just have a fun time as a social dynamic in the local Blue Lodge system and be involved with a club of people that carry a very powerful toolbox, even if they never open it.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that there you go. That's exactly right. But there's something just generically magical about the initiatory process that Masonry offers, that Masonry obliges every member to go through. And let me make this clear that I'm also talking about what people think of as co-masonry or woman's masonry What I'm talking about, even though I'm a white bread American Grand Lodge, California Grand Lodge Mason, and at the moment, there are no women in masonry. I also belong to the OTO, and there's plenty of women in the OTO. Okay,
Sure.
and but from a purely magical and spiritual point of view, I'm talking about the Masonic experience, whether it's considered clandestine by other lodges or grand lodges or other Masonic individuals. I don't care. This experience of a degree, moving from degree to degree, along the lines of the allegories of Freemasonry, is major magic, and anybody going through it is transformed in some way, whether they realize they're being transformed or whether the people that are working so hard to provide them this experience realize exactly what they're doing or not. There is something overtly magical
Oh, I
going
couldn't
on.
agree more. I couldn't agree more. It was so well put. That's just exactly how it is. The progressive advancement through the degrees is a growing process, and it's almost like with the tarot or with any other magical system or spiritual system, when you make contact, it awakens something latent within us that's not really up front. It's not a big surface thing. It's a deep, deep thing that's latent within us, and
It
it activates it within us.
well it, and it's in particular, it's to for the Western consciousness.
Yes.
And when I say Western consciousness, I'm obliging us to look at especially European consciousness of the last 2500 years.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm asking us to see not only the good positive aspects of Western civilization, but I'm also asking us to be very candid and frank about the spiritually restrictive aspects of Western civilization. And part of that negative aspect of Western civilization is this fact that we're somehow separated from God.
Absolutely.
And that we're somehow obliged to negotiate ourselves out of this situation.
This bind that we're born into,
Right, that right.
right?
And whether and of course Masonry doesn't care what religion you are. Okay, they the at the very least they want you to at least pay lip service to the fact that you acknowledge that the universe is a huge intelligence that you can't define,
And it's not you, right?
but Masonry, without preaching to you, without making you unduly study a bunch of stuff, doesn't require you to swallow a big philosophy
Sure.
other than the what is just humanly ethical. But what it does do is subtly liberates you from this very, very restrictive, basic and restrictive aspect to a lot of Western religious or spiritual tradition. And that's what I talk about when I speak to Masons and when I do the lecture on the Knights Templar and Freemasonry, and how that all reflects. It all goes back to the person of the mythological King Solomon, and how how becoming a Solomon is what spiritually liberates you. Okay, and Masonry, and I go to great length. I can't get into it here because sure. there's not enough time. Because yeah. it's my 4-hour lecture. Okay,
yeah.
but it's the Masonic experience. Just the way it stands, hands you the keys to this liberation, and to go through it. You use that key to whatever door you need to open, and every man is different, every Mason is different, every initiate is different, but they do. It is constructed in such a way as to hand you that key, and it's kind of a wonderful thing, and it's the same thing that makes a Mason truly a Mason is what makes a magician truly a magician.
Well put. Yeah, truly, in the lodge system, there's a saying, ancient light in modern times. And it truly, I think, is a good expression to reflect what you're saying, Lon. For me, that was why I got involved with the lodge myself, was to try to reawaken that Western tradition in my own consciousness, my own awareness, feeling a lack, feeling that restriction you spoke of. And I know personally, I'm a real big fan of all your works. And before we move on to the book I wanted to talk about with you during this podcast, I did want to mention that I am currently reading your book, The Magic of Thelema. And, or that's what it's called, right? The Magic of Thelema, right? Yeah, I've got it on ebook. And it is really, really resembles what you're saying. It's a lot of the same concepts of the moving through the progression of human consciousness in religious thought and how we approach the divine and the phases that are laid out in the aeons or the eras of time that go by, thousands of years that go by. And as you pointed out right now, when we're talking about the Western thought, we're talking about the last 2,500 years, and that's the shift that occurred. Before that time, we had the time of the great goddess, the time of the feminine worship, and then it shifted to the, and that was represented obviously with Isis, and then it shifted towards the Osirian myth, excuse me, and now we've shifted into the offspring, the age of the Aeon of Horus, which is that, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm getting it right when I'm looking at your material. It is that place that's beyond the restrictions that have come before. We've now moved into a higher awareness in which we no longer require the constructs that bound us with religare in the Latin meaning, religion being something to tie back or to only to limit the growth or to deliberately pattern the growth in one direction. Now we let go of the binds, is it not so? In our modern thinking, we move towards a more self-actualized state, if I could say that. Would you agree with that, Lon?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But it's even more natural. You know, two aeons ago was like the formula of your mother. There's nothing wrong with your mother.
Sure, nothing, love your mother, right?
nothing wrong with the female. Then the next age was like your father. Okay, the father's different than the mother, and. But still, there's nothing particularly wrong with the father. But the thing is that we now identify more magically with what the offspring does instead of focusing on the nourishment aspect of the mother, and instead of focusing on the disciplinary and the life and death aspect of the father, you know, where you're Well, that's pretty
Where
complex.
you're posed with the absolutes of life, the absolutes of life, the dualistic absolutes of life, sure, and the instruction you receive therein and how to walk through that. Yes.
And those are all real. Those are both of them are good things. We stand on those shoulders, you know. But the thing is now, what's really working best is we're here and now we're growing, and that's all a child. That's the job. That's the child's will, is to just grow, evolve. And a child is constantly undergoing this formula of continual change, growth, and evolution. And that's where we're at. And that's truly tied just with humanity's understanding of our relationship with the sun. We were too busy trying to feed ourselves during the nourishment cycle of the age of Isis. Okay. And in the age of Osiris, we figured out the sun, we need the sun to, make the plants grow. So the animals come and we need the sun for life, but the sun dies all the time, where that freaks us out. So we gotta make this, this negotiation with death. And that life comes from death. The seed dies, becomes the seed, or becomes the plant, and all of that stuff. And now we know that the freaking sun stays on all the time. Jeez, you know, it's just an illusion that it's nighttime. And so we're starting to put the thing together that it's an illusion, that death is an illusion thing too.
There it is.
That the sun stays on all the time, that we stay on all the time. And so that's so, can you see how fundamental that is?
Oh, absolutely. It's really amazing how, and you put it so succinctly too. I got to tell you, with your usual hermeneutical skill, you put it in really plain language. I really appreciate that about you, Lon.
Aw, shucks.
Well, let me ask you a couple other questions before we move on. Now, you mentioned a few things when you're talking about the tour that's coming up, and I wanted to kind of bounce some questions back at you about them. First of all, you talked about the Gnostic Mass. Now, could you just briefly kind of make a distinction between what most people listening, Christian-based listeners, might consider a Mass versus the Gnostic Mass?
Well, the Gnostic Mass that in particular that I'm talking about is the main ritual of the OTO, both public and private. And it is as a public service that you would go to on Sunday, take your grandmother to, and have brunch afterwards. It's very similar. It's a Eucharistic ceremony, where everybody ends up drinking a little wine and taking a nibbling a little host, and in the same way that the Roman Catholics turn the wine and bread into the blood and body of Christ, and then everybody eats it. And the idea is everybody becoming one with the deity through a Eucharist. And of course the Eucharist is one of the most ancient of magical acts, because there's something it harkens way back to that age of Isis, where God was nourishment, you know.
Sure.
And then it harkens back to the age before that, when the hunters go out to bring nourishment back to the village, and they end up getting themselves killed, and so they become they get killed in the hunt. You know, a lot of times they came back without a deer or a mastodon or anything, but they came back with a couple of dead people, because they got killed in the hunt. They ended up eating the dead hunters.
The dead warrior. That was the meat of the night, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it sounds icky and strange and macabre and everything else, but you know, it really wasn't. Not only that, but they loved these guys that they were eating, that these guys did keep the village alive. They were their saviors. They did eat their flesh. They did drink their blood, and they did worship them because they went someplace else and they saved the village. They saved the culture. They saved humanity. Okay. And that what we think now is just a terribly grotesque act of cannibalism is exactly the archetype for what the Christian myth of Jesus breaking his body and sharing it at the Last Supper. And the idea isn't that we should be eating each other. Okay. The thing is that the universe is only, we're part of the universe, and the universe is the only thing we have to feed upon.
Absolutely.
And in turn, we feed the universe. And it's love. Okay. It's love. And so the Eucharistic experience, the taking of bread, the drinking of wine, we're hardwired to make eating a sacred thing. When they say you are what you eat, they really mean it. Okay. Even the cells of our bodies have been totally replaced. What is it? They replace themselves every seven years.
Yeah. Right. That's what they say.
and what they replace it with is what we take into our bodies to nourish ourselves. Okay. So the Gnostic Mass, is Aleister Crowley's tweaking of the beautiful, beautiful Eucharistic ceremony of Orthodox Christianity. It has more in common with the Greek Orthodox and the Russian Orthodox and the Eastern Orthodox Church in that there's a veil over the altar. And there's one big other difference between the Gnostic Mass and the Roman or Orthodox
women,
Mass,
right?
Is that there's a priestess.
The woman involved, that's right. I knew you were going to say that. Yep. Because it's patriarchal in the Christian sense, and then he basically brought that to an
right.
end in his approach.
and everything we're talking about in this nourishment, love thing, this universal thing, is expressed, you know, most poignantly and most dramatically and most passionately in our the love and the physical act between a man and a woman.
Yeah.
And a man and a woman get together and they make a baby. Okay. And the baby is, and this is the age of the baby and everything else. And so the Gnostic Mass is, although it's rated PG, you're not going to see any terrible.
You can bring grandma down to it.
You can bring grandma into it. It'll be all right. But everything, even the Roman Catholic Mass, is in its own way a pantomime for the great mystery of sex.
Oh, sure.
And
the hierogamous, right? The sacred marriage.
Yes.
The sacred chemical wedding.
And the early Gnostics, and when we say Gnostics, you know,
we're using that pretty flippantly, aren't we?
we're really using it broadly,
yeah.
You know, because almost any nutty way of looking at stuff, there was a Gnostic sect.
Yeah, right. Well, can I just comment on what you've said so far, Lon? You know,
sure.
One thing I think that people don't realize is that we are all so far removed from the natural processes of life and the elemental exchange of energy and spirit all around us. We're so out of touch with that in our modern life, which is part of the reason why you and I both are hearkened to folks to, you know, that there's a way to awaken these things in our own awareness, to be able to greater understand what's going on and realize that a lot of the fears that are woven into the taboos in our culture are control memes. They're control paradigms. They're there for a reason. That's just like the knee-jerk reaction people have to the word occulted or hermetic. These,
yeah.
You know, these words are taboo. And it's because we've been programmed to flee from them. You know,
that's
because,
right. Oh, yeah.
We, you know, I mean, we can get into all the reasons why and the who's and what's. It doesn't really matter. The bottom line is the effect. And the effect is a lot of people ignore reality or the truth that resides all around them. And you mentioned something earlier about the buying into the idea, the romantic notion that we're the stranger in a strange land, that we're this like thing that's just cast away in this harsh reality, you know, where you know, everything's trying to kill us and like, God is absent and we, you know, we've been left like a scolded child in a wasteland, you know, and that's yeah. the way we're, that's the way we're raised to believe we are, you know, but in fact, yeah. in fact, we grow. Like a fruit on the vine, our umbilical cord is a branch to a tree. I mean, we grow in this environment. We're part of it. No, no, nothing is more part of this than all of us. And what Lon and I have understood, being that when you approach the magical reality, you begin to, it's a very self-centered approach because you realize that, in fact, guess what? You are the center of the universe. You are the very center of the universe. Everyone listening, in this very moment, you are the you are awareness focused down to a completely condensed point. And it's called the individual that is you. And you are the center of the universe right here and now. Each one of us is. And that's the big secret. And because we're so far removed from that natural processes and the exchanges of energy and life force all around us, we neglect to see that. We neglect to realize that. Enlightenment is also called realization, to realize the truth. And that's the real idea. And there's terms in Zen Buddhism, you know, the term avidya, right? It's ignorance, to ignore the truth, you know, and it's so ignorance, you know, but when we awaken, when we are enlightened, it is a realization. Nirvana, fully translated, is merely a sound like this. Like W-H-E-W, that sound where you get release from a great struggle. The great struggle was the pervasive unsatisfactoriness of the belief that you were a separate entity in this universe. That was the friction that was caused. Nirvana was the release of that struggle. The release that comes, the feeling of expression of, oh, wow, like the great tension is over. And then now we can rest in the realization of how connected we are to everything. And everyone. And that's really at the bottom line of all these things. The really simple, great truth, the giant 5,000-pound elephant or gorilla in the room, is the truth that we are all connected to this reality around us. And that's why you're to me, it's such an honor to speak with you, Lon, because you are somebody who's embraced that notion and has found a way to approach reality in what I would call the magical approach to reality. And this the reason why I asked you to come on today wasn't just because I enjoy speaking with you, which I do tremendously. And I know that my listeners enjoy our conversations and they're all looking forward to this podcast right here. But I also wanted to hear about your latest books that you've done. You've got one book that's is it to market or is it about to go to market called Homemade Magic? Is that correct?
Yeah, we should see Homemade Magic in a few months or a few weeks. I've been working on so many other things that the book comes out, I wonder what that was about.
Yeah, you're like, what was my intentions there in the beginning with, right? But if you could just briefly, just to kind of, you know, promote this latest project you've got going on, what were you trying to accomplish with this almost completed or ready to be released?
Oh, I never try to accomplish
anything. You always answer that to me.
It's true. I don't have any goals.
You must explain yourself. You have to. You have to thoroughly explain yourself in this.
Well,
climate.
first of all, I have a wonderful, wonderful publisher and a wonderful editor at the publisher I wanted to make sure she had a good book. And so if I had a goal, it was to please my editor because she expected so much of me. The last book that I did with Llewellyn was called Low Magic. And it was very similar to a book that I wrote many years ago called My Life with the Spirits, which was just stories about my life in magic and stories about particular magical events, magical, not only rituals, but just magically magical events. And in doing so, I do share a lot of technical information, but it's not like a textbook, a how-to thing with a bunch of charts and pentagrams and stuff. You can get that all over the place. And I've written a few things. My Magic of Thelema or Magic of Aleister Crowley has stuff like that. People use them like textbooks. In order to actually share the value of magic or the what may be of value, what may not be of value to somebody else, I have to give you an example of how I used it in my life. And in a way, it sort of disappoints people because people think that I dress up like Gandalf and strut around and heat up my coffee by hitting it with a wand or
I bet you could play a good Gandalf, though.
for short periods of time. So I give examples of, and what homemade magic is a more focused approach to that anecdotal story. This is how I do things in my life, I bring in sort of the rest of the family. This is how at least this magician, this was my home life in magic. This is what we did as we were raising our son. This is what we did as we lived in a neighborhood and had neighbors and friends and PTA meetings and all of that. And at the same time, had this incredibly bizarre, rich, magical life going on as a parallel universe. And how we integrated these universes, because to tell you the truth, once you're a magician, you're doing magic all the time. You and me are doing magic right now. This is a magical ceremony, complete with spirits that we're evoking and a whole hierarchy of electronic demons that are
doing our will.
Doing our will.
And I did my part to bring, to banish and to evoke what I could before the show.
Yes. Well, so far the demon Skype is working.
Let's not tempt him though.
No.
But
thank you, Skype. Yeah. Thank you for appearing.
Yeah. I love that in the little book you wrote, The Enochian World of Aleister Crowley, the little analogy you made about the mouse that comes up on your knee and sings your praises. Oh, ye who uses the alarm to wake up in the morning and wipes thy face with the rag.
Yes.
That was awesome. And let me just clarify for the listeners. He was using the analogy of what we do when we use calls to call elemental intelligences to the ritual. You're basically, you're coaxing them with flattery, in many ways, and acknowledging their accomplishments and calling them by name and speaking their language. And
right.
That's just a really good analogy, though, the idea. Wouldn't you pay attention to a mouse if he jumped on your knee and started doing that? Or if he squeaked, you just try to get rid of him. But if he spoke your language, addressed you by name, knew some things about you, you'd be more inclined to hear what he had to say, right?
You wouldn't even care if he spoke with a thick accent.
That's right. I forgot that part. Yeah, you wouldn't care about the thick accent, right? So just another question for you. How is your approach to magic received? You mentioned that with the PTA and the community and stuff where you live. How is it received amongst your neighbor? I mean, I can't imagine people have too much of a problem with you, though I know there are some people that even look past a person's pleasant demeanor and still find judgment and problems with their conduct. So how does it fare there?
I number one, I don't see myself as being odd or weird or strange. And I, you know, we have so much in common with everybody.
Sure.
That it's really easy for me to just fit in almost any kind of environment. I mean, look, compared to all the things we've got in common, religious differences, political differences are nothing compared to the fact that we all have to breathe. Okay.
That we're all
wearing clothes.
Sure.
That we've all had a past.
Yeah. We're all subject to gravity and mortality.
We're all subject to gravity. Yes. These are big things. Okay. The fact that one of us might be progressive and the other one might be conservative, that's nothing. Okay. That's absolutely nothing. And I find it very, very, I like people. I like people, and I'm because I'm so conscious of you know how screwed up I can be. It's easy for me to empathize with everybody else's screwed upness too. It's also very easy for me to see what it is I admire in people, and I've always found it kind of easy to give voice to my observations, and I get along with people. I just get along with people. I go to the coffee shop and I get along with people. And I focus really on the magic of what we've got in common. And sometimes you can tell, well, this person is a very conservative Christian. I can tell by the way the way they talk, and then I overhear their conversation with other people, and you know, if this person if we were to get into a you know what we believe type thing, that we're going to not have much in common, this person was going to actually freak out to think that I just whip up demons in my son's bedroom at night, and they just won't understand the subtlety of that.
No.
You know? And so I don't talk about that.
Sure.
If they do talk about religion, I can say, well, I was raised Methodist, and I sang in the choir for years, and I went to Methodist Youth Fellowship, and you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a Methodist minister. And I can talk about everything that we do have something in common with. And after a while, people actually get to know each other.
Sure. That's the same experience I have, Lon. You describe the same situation for me. I just find the things that we relate to. And I use the immortal words, which I often misapply the context of Jesse Jackson, where he said that, you know, we may not have come over in the same boat, but we're all in the same boat now.
We're all in the same boat now. That's absolutely true.
And I find that to be true across the board in most situations.
Yeah.
So it's
then after a while, when we actually know each other, then I can literally say, what'd you do last night, Lon? Oh, I gave a lecture on Hebrew Kabbalah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you were Jewish. Well, I'm not really Jewish, but I study Hebrew mysticism. And they go, oh, that's very interesting. And I said, well, I do that because it's a form of ceremonial magic, you know, like the wise men that visited baby Jesus. Yeah, I go to their school, you know. And no kidding. Once you get to know somebody, they can say, well, last night I whipped up a demon at the house. And they say to themselves, well, if Lon does it, it must be okay. You know?
Hey, I say that to myself all the time.
Yeah, well. Now, don't you fall into that. But the thing is, that we're all the big magic is that we're all crawling around on the surface of this planet together. We really are in the same boat. Mm-hmm. And that boat is not only that we're physically on the same planet together. Ultimately, everybody is everybody else. We are each other. And it doesn't do anybody any good to go into a relationship thinking that you are somehow separated from somebody, because, you know, you're not. You're there, okay? Eventually, we're all going to wake up to the fact that we've always been everybody all along. And so we may as well get along, okay? Well, you may as well start liking yourself in the form of the idiots on Fox News, okay? You may as well start liking yourself in people you disagree with. You may as well start liking yourself with the people that would do you harm. And if you can't wake up to that, you're not quite awake enough to be a magician yet. Okay, these are why a magician can deal with demons. This is why a magician can deal with things that are destructive and wild and crazy and frightening to other people, because all of these things are ourselves.
Well, I think that sentiment that you've just expressed would pretty much answer one of my final questions to you, because I know you as someone who is quite dismissive about the idea of dark machinations of suspected global power elites or their infernal minions and sorcerers. And I often wonder what makes you seem so almost cavalier and certain about, you know, having no worries about a perceived threat. But now that you've said what you said, I think that's probably why you have that position, is because of the sentiment you just expressed, right or wrong.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I guess so. I wrote a song called "I'm Scared." I don't know if I'd written and released that since our last talk.
I don't think so. No, I think the last one was last night I spoke to dead people, or last night I saw.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that was the last single I remember.
Well, I got a song called "I'm Scared," and it's kind of a funny thing of all the things I'm scared of, and it's not so much that I'm scared of all of those things. I'm making fun that people, it's sort of a comment on people that feel that they've got to be armed all the time. Hmm. And, it's called "I'm Scared," and I released it as a single, and it, I don't know for how many weeks, it was the number one, CD Baby, top selling single, independent single.
Yeah. Wow. Well, yeah, I'd like to get a copy of that. Maybe we can throw that in at the end of the podcast as a you know, if you send me a track, and I'll try to work that into the podcast.
Oh yeah, I'll
that'd be great. Great way to end the show. And you know, so just before we go, I wanted to tell you that I have been re-reviewing the Enochian Vision Magic, which we just put up. The two shows we did a couple years ago are now posted on freemantv.com at the Freighter X archive page. Or anybody who wants it, it's the Middle Chamber Freighter X archive page at freemantv.com. You can get part one and two of the show we did, I guess it was 2012, Enochian Vision Magic, two-parter, excellent talk. And Lon, I've been reviewing the material again, because I got to tell you, ever since I first came upon your material, I've been reading everything I can. I've got so many of your books, and I've read so much of it, and I feel very drawn to the Enochian material, especially the system that you have put together in that book. And I did a little working the other day. I did the first call text again, you know, based on what we did for the winter solstice last year. Remember the great global working that you did, which was an amazing experience. And I had a vision that I wanted to tell you about, just to see what you might think of it. I saw this, it was a upside down triangle, like a delta, with strange apertures coming off the points, and it was floating above my head. I was looking in a smoky quartz globe that I had on a pedestal over the Sigillum DMF, and I was using that during the whole working, and it was very, very remarkable. It's left me, just really had a deep impact on me, this vision that I had. It was one of the first. I had another vision, though, I don't know if you remember, when we did that working, it was a past life working, and I had a vision at that time of myself on a beach in like the Pacific, and it seemed like I was a soldier. And we talked about it afterwards. I don't know if you remember. I think it was Tom was the moderator for the webinar, and we talked about how the possibilities of what that meant and the idea of people who have died in, especially in wartime, you know, World War II being one of that era where a lot of people crossed over, and so the possibility of me having some sort of past life connected there is very great, you know, being an American and all. But anyways, yeah. So I just thought, I just thought I'd share with you that the experiences have been very rewarding and very giving me a lot to think about and really helping me in my own personal spiritual practice.
Well, very good. Now, was that triangular thing? Were you doing the 30th Aether text?
Yes.
Okay. Now, just make a little sketch of that triangle with the doodads on the point.
I did.
And,
yep.
Okay, and use that image when you do the next higher aether. Enter the next highest aether. Use that triangular thing sort of as your badge, like your
my pass to get to the next level.
So you could, I would probably project an image of that triangle as standing on the floor, and then you stand, go ahead and stand in it or around it. You don't have to stand in it, but use that image when you do the call for the next aether, which is Re. Every step along the line, you bring your own key to the next level. It's the classic Egyptian Book of the Dead technique. Okay,
so I must be onto something.
There you go.
That's awesome. That's so great. I didn't even realize that. I will do that. That's absolutely that's good advice. Oh well, listen, Lon. It looks like we're rounding up to the end of the hour, and I'm really again, it's been an honor and a pleasure as always to speak with you. But I wanted to just in the last few minutes to talk about some upcoming projects that you whetted our appetites with the last time we talked, and that's when I originally reached out to you. I was hoping you were going to tell me you had these other books finished, but you've got a couple other books coming up that I'm really excited about, and I hope I can be on the list for a desk copy of these two so we can really get into these. And first one's called The Magic Mason, I believe.
Yes, well, we're going to have to wait a little longer for The Magic Mason, but it's in the it's in the works. Also in the works is my experience, my years in the OTO, sort of my OTO adventure.
Yes, that's exactly. I was hoping to hear about that too. Now that one's still in production.
That's still bubbling around. I guess I'll have to wait for a few more people to die.
Well, an interesting aside, though, on that is I'm working closely with SyncBook Press. This is actually the SyncBook Radio Network is what this podcast, The Middle Chamber, is on now on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. We release the podcast. But it's a publishing house as well. And SyncBook Press is working feverishly and furiously to get as many exciting new, what we call type one artists, the new thought movement right now that's going on. A lot of the artists and the researchers and the writers and people who are really trying to express themselves. And what I would say is that age of the child, the offspring, the aeon of Horus being expression, creative expression, how you meet and greet reality, how you express your experience, how you overcome obstacles, all the things that go into that. And so one of the books that we're looking at for a future project is from a member of the OTO in upstate New York, a novel, a magical novel. And so I've been asked to help review and edit that book, and maybe we could turn to you, and maybe you could give some insights too when the time comes. It's down the road anyways.
Well, I'm a literary guy.
Sure.
So just, yes, I do stuff like that. There is something that I do like to just very briefly talk about that I've just finished, and it is it's called The Wiser Book of Horror and the Occult, and it's an anthology of horror, and I've edited it, and I have a lengthy like 6,000 word introduction to it, and it's coming out from Wiser real soon. It's got rare stuff by Lovecraft and other founding fathers of horror, and I think you'll really, really like it. I especially hope that you like the my introduction, my horror introduction. So
well, Lon, as soon as you can give me a copy of that intro, even if it's separate from the publishing, just a review, I would gladly love to read it and have a conversation with you about it.
Okay, well, I'll get that to you as soon as I get a nod from everybody that
sure,
that'll
sure.
be good timing for it, and we'll do that. And in the meantime, when we hang up here, I'll send you my song "I'm Scared."
Yes, and we'll put that at the end of the podcast. And it just once again, I want to thank you so much for being available, and I want to thank all the listeners who came Saturday night, which I know they will tonight, to hear this, and will be downloading this podcast throughout the week. It's been an honor and a pleasure, as always, sir, to speak with you, and we look forward to our next conversation. And unfortunately, my wife, Mater X, couldn't make it for the show today. She had other things that she chose to do, which was really important stuff with the family. So, we understand, and we're sorry that she wasn't around, but, I know that she'll be there for the podcast release tonight, and we have the chat room, which we will open at 9 o'clock tonight for anybody who wants to pop in and listen and maybe field questions. I'll be there too, and that's at middlechamberchat.chatango.com. So anybody who wants to come and just hang out and listen to the release of the podcast tonight, we would love to have you. And again, you can reach our we're on Facebook at Freighter X space Mater X. That's Freighter X, one word, one name. Mater X, the second name. We share the page. There's also the Middle Chamber Facebook page. Lon, you're also on Facebook as well, but I don't know, you probably have too many friends. You probably get full, right?
Now, yeah, well, I've got a Facebook friend page and a Facebook fan page, and please fan me, please, Lon Milo Duquette, and you can send me a friend request also. I've hit my limit, but I make people mad and they quit every once in a while. So there's
no, I couldn't believe that. Come on,
there's. And I got to take Constance tonight to go see, there's a Newport Beach Film Festival, and a person that comes to our Monday night class, her mother has a documentary film that's entered in the film festival. It's on breastfeeding.
Oh, right. Okay. Excellent.
So,
well, I know we got to wrap this up because you need to get ready for your evening with your lovely wife. And I want to thank her for giving us time with you this afternoon. And I want to just say, you mentioned one last thing, one last sentiment. You talked about continual change, growth, and evolution, about how we are all like children. We are all moving through this journey in life with those as our experience. And we all must pay attention. The sleeper must awaken in us all. And how this happens in this journey, which we make on this mortal coil that we're going through, that's the experience, however it happens for you. It may not be magic. It may be whatever. We're talking about magic and masonry and things like this because this is what we're interested in. And if you're listening, you're probably interested in it too. But if you're just checking this out and it's not something you're interested in, we're not trying to tell you this isn't for everybody. This is for those who feel called and drawn to it. But we know the sleeper must awaken. We also know that change and upheaval bring growth and wisdom, that comfort really must be afflicted and agitated and stirred up to keep things fresh and real. So expect change and uncertainty, everybody, and you won't be surprised when it arrives. And as the sage John Lennon said, life is what happens when we are busy making other plans. So get used to it, right? I mean, that's the journey we're on. He also said that time wounds all heels. I like that one too. But anyways, Lon, again, thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful evening tonight and a day, a weekend. And we look forward to our next conversation here in the Middle Chamber with Lon Milo Duquette.
Me too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
My life's in constant danger. I'm threatened by each stranger. I'm scared they'll club and stab me. Scared kidnappers will nab me. I'm scared of home intrusion and cultural infusion. I'm scared of immigrants and teens in drooping pants. I'm scared of sudden sounds. I'm scared of mimes and clowns. I'm scared of boys in hoodies, scared they will steal my goodies. I'm scared of car hijackers, scared of computer hackers. I'm scared of mysticism, that devil communism. I'm scared of social welfare and universal healthcare. I'm scared of foreign accents. I'm scared of paying taxes. I'm scared of other races and unfamiliar faces. I'm scared of intellectuals. I'm scared of homosexuals. I'm scared of bureaucrats. I'm scared of Democrats. I'm scared of Satanists, scared of psychiatrists, scared of my medications, fear college educations. I'm scared of revolution, theory of evolution.
I'm scared
of knocks upon my door.
I'm scared
of homeless and the poor.
I'm scared
that guys will disrespect me.
I'm scared
that girls will just reject me.
I'm scared
that I look like a fool.
I'm scared
just like I did in school.
I'm scared
my mother's ghost still haunts me.
I'm scared
dad's disapproval taunts me. I'm scared of darkened streets. I'm scared of halal meats. I'm scared of NSA, UN and CIA. I'm scared of my own shadow. I'm scared of Rachel Maddow. I'm not an evil fellow. My spine's just painted yellow. I'm scared each waking hour. In dreams I cringe and cower. Scared that I have no power. Wish I lived in a tower. Scared of my powerlessness. Scared of my cowardice. That's why I carry a gun.